Hello and welcome. This is the latest update from the IFRS Interpretations Committee. My name is Robert Bruce and I work as a financial journalist. With me to discuss the highlights of the September meeting are Committee Chairman Robert Garnett and Michael Stewart, Director of Implementation Activity. First, Bob, over to you. What's been happening over the summer and what happened at this meeting?
Well, we've been fairly busy over the summer, as you would expect. And we've finalised two documents that have been published for public comment. One of these was the input we given to the IFRS trustees. So the document there that has gone out is looking at the criteria for assessing whether a topic meets the requirements for annual improvements. That's part of the improvement to the due process of the organisation. The comment date for that is the 30th of November, as it also is for one of the products that we mentioned from the Interpretation Committee at the previous podcast, which is stripping costs in the production phase of a surface mine, dealing with the question of whether some of those costs can be capitalised and carried forward, or if they should be accounted for as production costs. So anybody who's interested in either of those two documents, please get the comments in well before, preferably, the 30th of November. Mm. One of the other things we've been looking at, though, is the nature of our decisions, because many people think that all we do is reject items. In fact, we decide whether we're going to add them to the agenda or not, and if we don't add them to the agenda, we also decide what we're going to do with them. Now that we've got more clarity on... or at least we think we've got more clarity on what should go into annual improvements, then the question is that if we've got a number of issues coming up, not necessarily related, but all on the same topic, for example, a number of issues that have been arising on share-based payments recently, the question is whether we should continue to try and tackle these one by one, or if in fact they should be looked at, shall we say, more holistically. That's the role that we would expect for post-implementation reviews to be taking. So subsequent to the completion of the board's MOU projects in June 2011, everybody is hoping, of course, that there'll be a lot more free time, and not just the board wishing that. And this will be an opportunity then for the board to look at some of these issues to determine that if the principles that they had established in the IFRS standards that have been issued over the past few years, if there are difficulties in applying those in practice, then we can look at all of the issues. So we think some of the issues, and we'll be talking about one or two of those as we're going through the rest of this, that they're more than an annual improvement, but something that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Michael, what were these other issues we discussed?
Right, well, I think the first one to start with, really, is one related to IFRS 2, which is the share-based payments standard.
Yes.
And in particular, looking at the vesting and non-vesting conditions and how those interact and should be reflected in the accounting. You may remember this is a project we've been looking at, an area we've been looking at over several months now. And so what the committee was doing this time around was looking at some sort of the final issues that were part of this overall project, and in particular looking at, for example, when an employee is told that they're granted some share options, but if they leave and go and work for someone else, a competitor, then they would forfeit the right to those. So how should that non-compete condition within the share-based payment, how should that be reflected in the accounting? And the other aspect of the accounting that the committee have looked at this time is where an employee is required to work, for example, for 3 years, but there's a sales target connected with whether or not they're going to get these share options, and perhaps that extends one further year, a fourth year. How should the fact that the time periods do not coincide, how should that be reflected in the accounting? So the committee did reach a tentative technical decision on this, but in standing back and looking at all of the issues we've been looking at in this project and looking at the consequences for these, for the standard, the the most straightforward way forward appears to be to make some significant amendments to the standard. And there are some concerns here as to whether this is too big a change for inclusion in mm-hmm. annual improvements.
Yeah.
So what the committee have decided to do is to ask the board for its view on this. Is this something that the board would feel comfortable including within annual improvements, or should it be included in a post-implementation review, such as Bob was referring to? So that will go to the next board meeting, which is in mid-September, and we'll seek the board's advice on the way forward for that.
So we'll wait and see on that.
Yes.
What next? Profit sharing.
Well, this is a very intriguing one that's come to us from some people who are planning to move to IFRS. As a former businessman, it fills me with horror that I might be paying bonuses to my employees based on the amount of taxable profit I've got. But this is apparently typical in some parts of the world. And over the years, they've actually been accounting for this as if it were a tax, because it's the amount that is based exactly on the taxable profits. It's a fixed percentage. It's set by law by the government. So it has all the characteristics as if it were a tax, except it's paid to the employees. Now, without going into all of the details in there, of course, the local standard setter themselves realised that it was hard to call something that's paid to employees a tax, even though it might have had the characteristics of it. So they've got a local standard that requires it to be accounted for as an expense, an operating expense. But the calculations, if there are these awkward things, temporary differences that create deferred tax liabilities, that they also have the same mechanics in accounting for any potential additional deferred distribution, shall we say, of the bonus for when the temporary differences reverse in the future year, just the same as deferred tax.
Yep.
So it has exactly the same logic or lack of logic as our standard IAS 12. But the question really is that coming into the IFRS world, we have standard IAS 19 that deals with employee benefits, and it deals particularly with long-term employee benefits and how they should be calculated. And you shouldn't calculate them the way you calculate deferred tax. So we have been asked, in fact, whether or not there is an opportunity for this one submitter and other countries with the same problem to continue doing the same thing as they were doing before. And I'm afraid the answer is no.
Unsurprisingly.
Unsurprisingly.
And next issue, put options.
Yes, put options. This is another long-running project that the committee's been looking at. And this is the situation where you have a group, consolidated group, and where one of the subsidiaries is not wholly owned by the group. And the parent entity has written a put option to the holders of the minority interest, the non-controlling interest in that part-owned subsidiary, that entitles those shareholders to be able to force the parent company to buy back the shares in the subsidiary at some future date for some determined amount, whether that possibly is a fixed amount or perhaps it's fair value of the shares on the date of exercising that option. Now, the committee, this is one of those issues, it's a bit like where you've got a loose thread on a piece of clothing, you pull it and you start pulling and suddenly the whole thing unravels. The original question that came in was quite narrow, and it was really all about the remeasurement of a liability within this kind of arrangement. But in order to, and in particular, whether that remeasurement should be a profit or loss item, or whether it should be an other comprehensive income item, sort of equity type item. And the reason for it coming to us in the first place was that there's been some divergence in practice, and obviously one of the objectives of the committee is to try and eliminate or reduce the amount of divergence that we see in practice in the application of the standards. This particular item, as we started to look at it, we started to look at sort of the whole context in which the question arises and some of the accounting issues that arise there. Now, in doing so, it's grown somewhat and has started to encroach on areas that really are very challenging. And the committee has battled to try and address some of these challenges, but also conscious of the fact that there is a main board project underway at the moment. The project is the Financial Instruments with Characteristics of Equity, shorthand known as the FICE project, that does deal with some aspects of what we've been looking at here, and certainly some of the more tricky aspects of what we've been looking at here. And so whilst the committee did reach a tentative conclusion on the very narrow question that was originally submitted to it on the remeasurement of the liability, the committee is very conscious of the fact that there are these very significant peripheral issues, surrounding issues, that really, it doesn't matter if the committee manages to solve the narrow question, there's still a big problem because of the other issues that surround it. So the path forward that the committee's decided to take is to raise these issues to the board and recommend that as the board is working on the FICE project that they incorporate these issues into that project, drawing on the work that the Interpretations Committee has been doing on this, because they have been researching it, debating it, and so there are some ideas here and some recommendations that the committee can usefully make to be considered as part of that broader board project. Meanwhile, on the narrow question, that's subject of a tentative agenda decision, and as with all of these, it's included in the IFRIC update with a consultation period. So if constituents want to comment on whether or not they agree with the tentative decision on that remeasurement, then they have 30 days in which to write in to us, express their views, and that will then be considered again at the November committee meeting.
Yeah. And finally, IAS 24, key management personnel.
Yes, I thought this was a very clear-cut question when it first came in. Who are the key management personnel in a company?
Yes, they always start out sounding clear-cut, and then...
and then the twist comes, yes. We even had a definition in the standard of what key management personnel actually are. But the circumstances in which this was framed was the operation of mutual funds, where a company had been engaged to, in fact, manage the funds. The company had some people who were taking these key decisions, but they were not employees of the fund itself. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they managed many funds, in some cases over 100. Mm-hmm. And the question is, well, now, who are the key management personnel? There are two issues that are important, both for disclosure. One is to know the relationship, yep. So who's taking the decisions, and the other one is to disclose any transactions between them. There's some consternation in some parts of the world as to whether or not you disclose the fees you paid to the management company, or in fact you disclosed a proportion of the salaries and bonuses and all the other perquisites that the employees were getting from their company. So we, as a committee, looked at this, talked about it for some time, had a good discussion on what we thought the intention of the standard was, and came up with the conclusion that key management personnel don't actually have to be people. The people who take the decisions, mm-hmm. of course, are people. Yeah. But in this particular case, it's the company, the management company, that yes. we felt met the objectives of describing who the key management personnel were. So disclosure of the fees to that company, as well as disclosure of the relationship with the company, is what companies should be doing. And I hope that brings a great deal of joy and happiness to all those people who, up until now, have been disclosing 1% and 2% of the salaries and bonuses of all these key decision makers.
Yes. Fees is quite a different thing.
Very different. But yes. we felt that if you're an investor in a mutual fund, then you would be quite interested in the amount of fees that were paid to manage the company.
Absolutely, yes. Michael.
Yes.
Finally.
Yes.
And the date of the next meeting and what's happening next.
Right, okay. The next meeting coming up is 4th and 5th of November. So the issues that I mentioned earlier about with the tentative agenda decisions will be just confirming those, finalising those next time. The other thing that's, of course, out for comment at the moment, which was mentioned earlier, is the consultation on the criteria for assessing annual improvements. Now, strictly, it's not a consultation document of the Interpretations Committee. It's something that's been published by the IFRS Foundation. at the request of the trustees of the foundation, but it's something that very much affects the work of the interpretations committee, given that they consider issues for inclusion within annual improvements before they're then passed on to the board. Now, this consultation document is out for comment until the 30th of November. The reason for doing the consultation is that to date, the criteria that we've used have been that the amendment needs to be necessary but not urgent. And there's sort of an informal additional criteria that there's an understanding that the amendment would be minor in nature, although obviously people have different concepts of what might be minor. Is it a minor impact on the consequences, or is it a minor change to the wording?
Yeah.
You know. So anyway, the consultation document has some broader, more expansive criteria in it, trying to identify in part why we do some of these amendments. Some of them are simply to clarify the language. So ones that wouldn't change any of the principles, wouldn't propose a new principle, but just try to clarify some unclear language. Others might correct an oversight within the standards, so a change that does need to be made. Again, not changing a principle or introducing a new one, might in some cases introduce an exception where perhaps there should have been an exception to be in line with perhaps a recent change to another standard, that sort of thing. So anyway, those criteria are there. The idea is that this will form part of the due process handbook for the IASB, and obviously will have therefore an impact on the work of the Interpretations Committee and the Board when they are considering issues for inclusion in annual improvements.
Thank you for that, and thank you very much indeed, both of you, Michael and Bob. And finally, the traditional disclaimer. This podcast presents a non-authoritative overview of some of the major topics discussed during the IFRS Interpretations Committee meeting in September 2010. The views expressed are those of the individuals in this podcast and are not necessarily those of the committee. Those of you who wish to go into the official detail of the meeting should refer to the IFRIC update. Thank you. Goodbye.